Good morning. It's likely Catholics will outnumber Protestants by 2021 in Northern Ireland, according to a leading academic. Dr. Paul Nolan, who specialises in monitoring the peace process and social trends, told BBC News that there could be more Catholics than Protestants in Northern Ireland by the centenary of the foundation of the state.
3 years from now, we come to the centenary of the founding of the Northern Ireland state, and of course the state was set up in order to provide Protestants with the security or the guarantee of a permanent inbuilt majority. We will end up, I think, in the ironic situation on the centenary of the state where we actually have a state that has a Catholic majority.
So, is this a game changer? The commentators Alex Cain and Chris Donnelly with me this morning. Morning to you, Chris.
Morning, Steve.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Alex.
Morning, morning, Chris as well. How are you?
Well, Alex, is this a game changer? What's this going to look like in a few years' time?
Well, I think, first of all, it's worth bearing in mind. I think Paul himself said in his analysis yesterday and in the actual statistics, I'm always reluctant to say that every Catholic is a United Irelander in the same way that every Protestant must, by definition, be a Unionist. This has been coming a long time, so it isn't just overnight. Paul, it's slightly ironic, I suppose, that the year it's happening is 2021, as he says, the centenary of Northern Ireland. But when it comes to, when that debate comes, Stephen, and it's been coming for it's been coming since the beginning of the state as the demographic shifted, as the political dynamic shifted, it means that both sides, for the first time, certainly, I was talking to you, I think, a couple of weeks ago about this, for the first time in my lifetime, it's been considered very seriously, Unionists are actually thinking to themselves, this is a possibility. And I have been writing, and Chris will know this, I've been writing for 30 years that Unionists needed to address the demographic issue. They needed to be able to say to people, the Union is more important than just saying you're a Protestant. The Union is, these are the values of the Union, the values of the United Kingdom. We're still not actually doing that, Stephen, 50, 60, 70 years on.
Yeah, now what Dr. Nolan, how could I forget his name? My goodness, what Dr. Paul Nolan has said is that Unionists should not be too alarmed because you cannot necessarily equate being Catholic with supporting a United Ireland. But we'll get your views on this today. 0-30-30-80-55-55. So more recent figures from 2016, Chris, show that among those of working age, 44% are now Catholic, 40% Protestant. But I'll tell you what, Chris Donnelly, when you look at school children, you get a sense of what's coming. The difference among school children, 51% of school children Catholic, 37% Protestant. Wow.
Yes, Stephen, and I was going to make that point. Obviously, working in school myself, I'd be aware of that, that there has been quite a chasm now developing in terms of the numbers, the demographic profile of our younger population, that it is. We are moving towards we're moving towards parity overall within Northern Ireland. I think that's what Dr. Nolan is alluding to. But in the next 10, 15, 20, 25 years, it's quite obvious that we are going to move towards a Catholic majority within the North. Now, the interesting point, of course, that Dr. Nolan was talking about is that you can't necessarily translate that Catholics will always support Irish unity, just like Protestants, you know, that you can't say Protestants.
But the vast majority will.
But that's my point, Stephen, that the key point to remember is that people, because of the nature of our society, people from a Catholic background will have almost be naturally predisposed to look favourably upon a United Ireland outcome, just like people from a Protestant background look favourably upon the Union. And therefore, the arguments that Alex has been articulating, that I've been making for quite some time as well, is that from the nationalist and Unionist perspective, people need to be thinking, how can we make our vision one that not just persuades? I think persuasion is going a bit too far. Very many people in our society, we're solid in our convictions about which constitutional preference we would want in a long-term sense. But how can we accommodate? And where I think that nationalism is at an advantage now is that there is no, you know, dogma doesn't have any currency. Sinn Féin, once upon a time, were very fixed in terms of their vision of what Irish unity would look like. Now you hear from Sinn Féin and all the other nationalist voices, they're quite relaxed with the notion of Northern Ireland continuing to exist within a United Ireland, that there would need to be, the Good Friday Agreement would clearly need to remain in terms of power sharing within the North, that there would have to be constitutional safeguards for the British and Unionist identity. So that discussion is happening, I think, within nationalism. And I think the focus, and I think this is what Alex has been talking about for quite some time and others within Unionism, is that how do they move the vision of a union to something that is more friendly towards those who are predisposed to view themselves as culturally Irish?
Alex, Eugene's just sent me a tweet 1 minute ago, actually, and it says, while simple numbers don't mean a thing, it's ironic that more and more people are seriously considering a United Ireland because certain political parties have made such a pig's ear of the devolution project. Is there anything in that?
I think there's an argument in that. I think it's an argument in, as well. See, going back to the beginning, I mean, unionists have never... They've started with a 70% majority. And when you're comfortable, when you have a solid majority, what you do is make your state as comfortable as possible for all minorities, for everybody, basically, because your aim is always to maximise your voter base. Unionism, for a variety of reasons, I can understand some of those reasons, Stephen. They felt insecure. They were under attack. There were terrorist campaigns and so on. So they felt that they couldn't do the reaching out that was necessary. And the same on the other side. It's worth bearing in mind as well, Stephen, that nationalism for a long time, for reasons which I think I can understand as well, opted out, in essence, opted out of the state, opted out of Stormont. So we had maybe 50 years where neither side was really doing very much to encourage each other. But what is going to happen now? This debate... And I said, it's been coming for years. We know about the border poll. We know about the demographics. We know what happened with Brexit. We know with the European Union identity stuff, which a lot of small, what I would call small-end nationalists and small-U unionists were happy enough with. They'd never voted unionists. There's no sign that these people, whether they're nationalists or these soft-U unionists, had ever really bothered voting for a unionist party. But when it comes to the crunch, Stephen, at some point, which it will, I think it is now inevitable, you're going to ask people to make the ultimate judgment about their identity, about who they see themselves as, about what they want, about what their citizenship is, about what their values are. And for both sides, Chris is right about this, for both sides. And it's, unionism has to make its pitch. And it's also worth bearing in mind that the key factor in all of this is not Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin are well placed in the sense that they have built their own vote and they've been making an argument for United Ireland. But the United Ireland argument, the great persuaders in terms of small unions, it's not going to be Sinn Féin. They will never be able to convince them. It'll be Leo Varadkar. It'll be Micheál Martin. It'll be the Irish political establishment, because if they look as though they're serious, if they're saying, look, unions, we can work, we can create a great state together, that is an argument which I think unions will find much more difficult to contradict.
But do you know what, Alex, and some people would say that something similar happened with Brexit during the referendum when people were deciding whether to vote Leave or not, that the financial aspect of it only became real after the referendum vote, real in people's minds. How much is this actually going to cost? What are the financial consequences going to be? Why am I talking about that? Well, what needs to be looked at some stage very seriously if a United Ireland was to be on the brink of happening, can they afford it? What are the financial consequences going to be? How many billions is it going to cost? What would the health service look like?
Because, say, Stephen, and that's why it has to be the Irish government. Sinn Féin cannot answer those. Sinn Féin can commission economic reports, which they have, but it's only there. I think what's worth bearing in mind, if there's a border poll and that border poll has a majority wishing to leave the United Kingdom, then that decision is then facilitated by the British and Irish governments. United Ireland won't happen overnight. It could take years. All those things will have to be discussed. But the other thing to bear in mind, Stephen, and no one should dismiss this. By my reckoning, 70% of people who now describe themselves as nationalists, 70% describe themselves as unionists, it wouldn't matter how bad the economy was. They will always vote for their first preference. It's an emotional pull. It's what. But you're right, the huge economic debate has to happen. And I'm not sure, what to bear in mind over the past 15, 20 years, where we've seen economists predict one thing and then economic crisis followed by economic crisis. Yeah. People want certainty in this. If you're creating a new state, Stephen, which is this, it's what it's going to be. If that's what we're now talking about.
And that's my point. I don't think people actually know for sure, and maybe Absolutely. You can't know for sure, what is it going to cost? What would your financial prospects be in the future compared to Northern Ireland remaining in the United Kingdom, compared to a United Ireland? What would the actual reality be?
No, well, nobody knows. That's what I'm saying. Nobody knows, because nobody... We get all these figures have been bounced about. Sinn Féin will tell you, and some other nationalists will say, oh, well, if you didn't duplicate the health service and the education service and the water service, and the you'd automatically save this, you'd automatically save that. That's not necessarily true. It's not all that long ago that the Republic was had to be bailed out. It's not all that long ago that the United Kingdom was in a huge economic mess. It's not all that long ago that the European Union itself, people were wondering would it survive because of the crisis with the euro. So no one knows, Stephen. So what they're going to have to do, it's not simply the economics of this, because no one will ever be settled on that issue. It's much bigger issues. It's about the values. For me as a union, it's about the protection of my identity. I can't help it, Stephen. I make no apology for it. In every sense, I feel British. No one has ever put an argument to me that's made me want to change my identity. So if there's to be United Ireland, I'm not demanding that they have to make me comfortable. But those who want a stable, settled, consensual United Ireland maybe have to learn from some of the mistakes that we made on this side for 50, 60 years when unionists didn't make those arguments about stability and consensuality.
Here's Jim in Hillsborough. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Stephen. You hit the nail on the head there, Stephen. Where's all this money coming from? Whenever they got the United Ireland, you've hit the nail really on the head. Because we're to tell you something, Stephen. The farmers get single farm payment. The people get the prescriptions free, and a whole lot of other stuff going on, and DLA and all this here, all this money been paid out. And you know what I say? You'd be ahead. Any Catholic person would be a head case to vote for a United Ireland. They're far, far too well off here. They're getting everything that's going. But you have definitely hit the nail on the head whenever you said, where's all this money coming from?
The single farm payment, Jim, comes from Europe.
Oh, but sure, Britain pays into it. And then they're going to be pulling out. And you know yourself, Stephen, I just want to say this to you, Stephen. If you're putting £100 a week into a box, maybe you may put more in. But anyhow, Stephen, if you're putting £100 a week in the box for a year, you have £5,200 in it. But whenever you go to the box, there's only £100 in it. You'll be wondering where the money went to. That's why Britain is pulling out of the EU.
But you talk about the single farm payment, for example. If there was a United Ireland, then people here in Northern Ireland would still get it.
Well, you know yourself, Stephen, you saw it here not so long ago. Britain had to bail out the Free State.
For those of you who are unionists, are you not regretting supporting Brexit if it has? Well, Alex Kane, I'll put this question to you. For those unionists who supported Brexit, are they not now regretting it? Because it has very much opened the door to all of these discussions about, well, what would it look like if there were to be a United Ireland? Have you jeopardised the union?
I know. Look, I think it's certainly changed the dynamics, Stephen. As you know, I supported Brexit. And one of the reasons I supported Brexit is because of the whole European Union thing. I've long been uncomfortable with it. And some people made the point, indeed, I wrote about it during the referendum campaign, that if by chance we ended up with a Brexit, then it would change the dynamics of the debate. But the debate on Irish unity, Stephen, was always coming. It wouldn't have mattered if we were in the European Union or not, as Paul Nolan's figures would have been exactly the same. Those figures, the same debate would have come up. And yes, the EU figures, it'll tie us in more tightly in an economic debate and on an identity debate. But it's foolish for anyone to say that unionists brought this in themselves. It was inevitable, Stephen. It was always coming.
Here's where we're at. We're actually at a point now, if you think about it, where the DUP, they are talking about scenarios if there was to be a United Ireland. So Peter Robinson refused to do it in an interview that I did with him. I think it was last week, a week before, where he said, I'm not getting into that hypothetical because it'll never happen. However, that contrasts with Arlene Foster, who told Paddy Keelty, as you know, that she would move out if there was United Ireland. Then last night, don't know if any of you noticed that on The View with Mark Carruthers last night, the DUP MLA, Christopher Stalford, he said he wouldn't be pushed out of his home if there was a United Ireland. Let's have a listen.
Actually, I think it's reflective of the views of a lot of people within the unionist community who feel that they would be effectively pushed into the Irish Sea. For my part, I would never leave Northern Ireland. I was born here. I was reared in Belfast. My family are from here. We've been here for hundreds and hundreds of years. This is our home. I would never leave this island. I would never be pushed out.
So, Chris Donnelly, we can't read too much into this, can we? But there's now been a discussion. Fact. And Arlene Foster telling us what she would do if there was United Ireland. Now another DUP MLA, Christopher Stalford, telling us what he would do if there was a United Ireland.
Yeah, I think Arlene Foster's comments were quite unfortunate and really demonstrated a poor leadership. I mean, the idea that you would just up and leave, I mean, if she is the leader of her community, which she is, the UP have never been in a stronger position electorally within unionism, then that sends entirely the wrong message out. And I was glad to hear that last night on The View, Chris Buckhalter saying, you know, this is his home, this has been his people's home for hundreds of years. Of course it is. And it's worth remembering, I mean, sometimes this discussion's had, I think, as we mature now in having this United Ireland discussion, it's going to be important to recognise that United Ireland is not going to happen because unionists and nationalists come to some big agreement and agree that they both want an agreed United Ireland. That does a disservice to people who are unionists. I mean, we live right now in the United Kingdom in Northern Ireland. I am a Republican. I just have to live with it. We have a deal, the Good Friday Agreement, which accommodates me within the United Kingdom. But my preference is still for United Ireland. And people who would be strongly of the unionist persuasion, and I take Alex's point in this regard, there is nothing that can be said that's going to change their minds that they would prefer to have the United Kingdom. However, if a majority of people in Northern Ireland want the United Ireland, then we are going to have United Ireland. But the manner, the nature of that in terms of the accommodation of the unionist minority is something that's going to have to be agreed in the style of the Good Friday Agreement that already exists.
Here's Michael. Morning, Michael.
Morning, Mr. Nolan. How are you?
Go ahead.
Well, my point is, it's this thing about the United Ireland, I think we should change that to an Ireland of equals. Now, Arlene Foster, and Chris Donnelly's right, she didn't show very good leadership. Up sticks and go. Well, do you know that what that tells me is that Northern Ireland coming up to 100 years in existence. Now, to be quite honest, the Unionist Party, as in pre-1968-69, made a mess of this country. They made Protestant people feel superior to Catholic people. And that wasn't really the case. So they've made a mess of it. So let's sit down, let's talk about it. And I was glad to hear Christopher Stalford on last night. Let's talk about it, and talking's better than fighting.
Michael, thank you. Paddy in West Belfast. Morning, Paddy.
How you doing? Let me start. Is the United Ireland going to be 50% plus one? Is it going to be 50? Is it going to be 80% plus one? What is it going to be? And are we going to find ourselves in a similar scenario where there's going to be resistance to a United Ireland? Now, both of the political parties have a big job on their hands here, because the political parties have driven people apart for so long that we have unionism who can't even believe the concept of a United Ireland, and the Republican nationalist people who haven't actually been talking about it because it's politically been driven from the top down are dealing with poverty and all sorts of things. And there isn't a place of equals within republicanism, and there isn't a place of equals within unionism. So the place is in an absolute mess. So are we going to find ourselves with a resistance from loyalism? Christopher Stalford saying he would fight his corner. Well, what does that fight really mean? Does that mean...
Well, no. Hold on a moment.
Let me finish.
No,
hold on,
no,
let me finish.
No. Let me also just be very clear. What Christopher was saying was that Northern Ireland is his home. And, you know, when you talk about fighting, Christopher would fight politically for Northern Ireland to be his home.
There was a civil rights association and there were no guns around in the early days. What I'm saying is the scenario, the elephant in the room is there going to be armed resistance to the idea of a United Ireland?
Well, not from Christopher Stalford, there's not.
Well,
let's
not
make that
it
clear.
Is, but
that's
I'm
fine.
Saying there are going to be people who will think we need to fight with a capital F to keep ourselves within the UK. Politically, the place is an absolute mess. The political parties have a very big job on their hands to do over the next 15 to 20 years, if the figures are what they are.
Alex Kane?
Well, I'm always wary of this argument, you know, trying to get people to say, oh, somebody will be fighting arms, will be taken up and so on. What Christopher meant, and I agree with him on this point, and it's where I slightly disagree with Ireland, but yeah, I mean, I see myself as a citizen of the United Kingdom. If that changes, and it may well, I still, oddly enough, Stephen, I still don't think it will. I think the arguments will be strong enough to stop it for a while. But if it does happen, I'm a Democrat. I will accept that. And I, people,
but listen,
to
even
me,
your language as a unionist, stop it for a while.
Oh, no, stop. Okay, listen, I just think that the numbers will not add. I don't mean stop it in that sense. I just meant the numbers will not add up. I think as it stands at the minute, if there was to be a border poll in the next 2 or 3 years, I think it's highly unlikely. That. But if you're saying to me that, I mean, I would have said maybe 30 years ago, Stephen, somebody said to me, is United Ireland likely in your lifetime, Alex? I would have said, and giving myself to maybe my mid-80s or something like that, I would have said, no, highly unlikely. If you're asking me the same question now, I would say, yeah, there are conditions which exist now which didn't exist 20 years ago, which may shift the balance. And that is why I've been arguing for years that unionists need to get the idea. The argument has to be more than, oh, we're the majority, or this is good, or that's good. It has to be something more. The NHS is brilliant, Stephen. I've benefited from the NHS. It's brilliant. But the argument for the union has to be bigger than just, oh, the NHS is brilliant, and you get this. It has to be something more complex, more detailed, and it's going to come. That debate, it's no bad thing, Stephen. This debate should have happened 40, 50, 60 years ago. It's no bad thing. Well, both sides can look at all the logical arguments without, in the absence of violence, in the absence of killing each other, and say, here are some straight facts on what a United Ireland would mean or what's staying in it. That's the debate, and I welcome that debate. I really do.
Alex in Lisburn. Morning, Alex. Hello, Alex. Alex in Lisburn, not there. Pauline Armitage. Morning to you, Pauline. Not there. Fran, North Belfast. Good morning, Fran.
Yes, Stephen, I'm here. Stephen, it's great to hear this bit of consensus between both Alex and Chris that the demographics are there, and it appears hopefully only to be a matter of time before there's going to be a border poll, a referendum on national reunification. So the debate's already started. It's on your show. It's in the newspapers. It's out in the public domain. So why don't we take it to the next step, which is where the unionists sit down from a position of relative strength and agree whatever the structures are going to be going forward, in the likes of having a written constitution, which was an integral part of the Good Friday Agreement. That's never been instituted, but I would personally believe in a reunified Ireland that we must have a written constitution in order to protect all the rights of people in society.
Well, have a listen to Alex Lisburn, who is with us now, because as a unionist, Alex, you feel vulnerable, don't you?
I don't know if I personally feel vulnerable. I think the union is vulnerable. I think it's for a long time there, after the Good Friday Agreement, but when you had it appeared to be working to a degree, I felt that if anything it strengthened the union. I think the whole idea of the Good Friday Agreement was to bring on both, make the largest population feel happier in the UK. I think for a while it worked, and I think it's been undermined by talk of crocodiles, speaking crocodiles, and funding stopped for the Irish language, and Curry my yogurt and that sort of thing, and basically the attitude of the main unionist party. And that's why I feel vulnerable. I think, I mean, there's going to be people who are going to vote for United Ireland regardless, and there'll be unionists who'll never vote for it regardless, no matter what the economics are. But it's the middle ground. And I think the idea of the Good Friday is to capture the middle ground. I think we've lost that, you know, much down the stupidity on part of a lot of the unionists.
What do you mean,
stupidity? Whenever a unionist first minister talking about feeding crocodiles, and you have a minister in the assembly cutting funding for an Irish language group on the mouth of Christmas and wishing them a Merry Christmas, you know, they do not think further. They do not think beyond that, and think strategically that, you know, keep, you know, they just seem to, all they can do is think that you'll score petty points and leave it at that. They never thought beyond. They wouldn't make good chess players.
Stephen, can I maybe say that?
Yes, of course you can.
Yes, thank you. No, what I wanted to say was, see, for me, the Good Friday Agreement was a mechanism that allowed Republican militants, you know, the armed wing of republicanism, to sit down at the constitutional table of nationalist politics. I mean, people talk about consent, they talk about democracy. I just want to remind everybody yet again that partition was never voted upon. There was never a referendum. There was never a border poll to bring partition in. And for me, I mean, anyone who believes in democracy and Brexit is a perfect example. If the will of the people in the north of Ireland or Northern Ireland as we go forward into the future is reunification, I feel unionists and their leaders, it's incumbent upon them to sit down and solidify their position within this kind of new paradigm going forward. But see, if they say, no, 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 never, 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 we have a veto, I suggest that we just move on without them.
Let me bring in Senator Mark Daly this morning, Fianna Fáil, who's one of the authors of a report that was released last year on a new Ireland. A new Ireland, Senator Daly, what would that look like? Good morning.
Well, I mean, the report itself is entitled Brexit and the Future of Ireland, Uniting Ireland and its People in Peace and Prosperity. It's 1,232 pages long, but like our former Taoiseach Albert Reynolds, I managed to get it down to one page and it's on my website. And I suppose the lesson of Brexit is you don't hold a referendum and then come up with a plan and then, you know, tell people what the future is going to look like. What you have to do is have long engagement with all sides on the ideas that they have in terms of health, education, the economy and the society and the future that we can all have. But one of the key, I suppose, things we identified in the report was addressing the unionist concerns. And we did get a paper written on what those concerns are. Now, by no means addressing all their concerns, but it did identify some key concerns. One was the issue of would there be retribution for former members of the security forces. Now, we don't make any recommendations on that, but obviously a line has to be drawn under that, because if we want to create a new future, we can't have people thinking that if they were a member of the security forces that there would be any type of witch hunt. Their issue of land came up, and some people are concerned that the land that was given during the plantations would be taken back. And I'd say, well, who would we give it back to?
But whether,
and again, you know, you cannot create a new future by trying to solve the problems of the past or, in fact, settle scores from the past. And lastly, and most importantly, I think, on the union side is addressing the issues of, you know, protecting culture and identity and their traditions. And that has to be addressed in advance. And things like statues are important, things like street names, and, of course, all the other issues around identity. Yeah. And they have to be addressed way in advance of any referendum. And I think that is the key lesson. You do not have a referendum and tell people what the future looks like. And, you know, we must have long-term engagement, and that is one of the key recommendations of the report.
But just on that point of culture and identity, Senator Daly, no matter what impact Brexit has in the future, presumably you don't underestimate the passion and the vigour with which unionists would defend their place in the United Kingdom.
Well, I mean, everybody's entitled to put their point of view across. And we saw, I think, the idea of how that would happen in the Good Friday Agreement in terms of a referendum. And that's using constitutional and democratic means. But we are not going to go back to the bad days of the past. But we did ask President Obama's senior policy advisor on countering violent extremism on what should be done now in order to prevent those people who live in the most disadvantaged loyalist community from being exploited and used by paramilitary leaders to keep their business empires and their drug dealing going under the idea of protecting culture and identity. And that is the same as it is in other places where people are suffering from disadvantage. Is you give them jobs, you give them education, you give them hope and housing and opportunity. And that's how you prevent them being radicalized by those who would like to keep the status quo going for their own ends, to keep power and to keep control, but not necessarily in the best interest of those young people whose futures are not bright because of the economic disadvantage in parts of Northern Ireland.
Can Ireland afford a Northern Ireland?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I'm currently working with an IMF economist who is probably the only economist in the world who has first-hand knowledge of reunification. He was working for the IMF in Germany when the wall came down, and he is looking for the figures, or looking at the figures in Northern Ireland, and in a unification scenario, that in fact we can afford a united Ireland, and in fact it would be better for the people of Northern Ireland, because despite being part of one of the largest economies in the world, according to the EU, Northern Ireland is part of one of the top 10 poorest regions in the EU. 9 of those poorest regions are actually in the UK, and Northern Ireland is one of them. So, you know, when you look at Even the UN Human Development Index, again, which I included in my report, when it analysed Northern Ireland's place, if it was part of, if it was its own entity, an independent Northern Ireland, the UK is ranked in health, education and income 16th in the world. The Republic is 8th in the world.
I don't know if you're aware that it was my programme where when Minister Jimmy Dinahan, we did a joint programme with RTE.
Yes, I watched the programme.
Yeah, and he said this was pre-Brexit, pre-referendum. He said that the Irish government cannot afford a United Ireland.
Well, that's why I've gone into the facts, because nobody has this report that I compiled for the Good Friday Agreement Committee here in Leinster House was the first report ever compiled by a parliamentary committee of the Irish Parliament on a United Ireland. And rather than looking at, you know, people who had written columns and written articles for newspapers, I looked at the facts. I went and got the best experts in the world in economics and in terms of social issues, mental health issues in Northern Ireland, but also politics and constitutional issues, to actually look at the facts. And that's why I've got this IMF economist to look at the facts. And nobody has looked at the facts before. And in fact, the headline figure for Northern Ireland's expenditure includes Northern Ireland's share of British military global spending. There's 2.9 billion allocated to Northern Ireland expenditure that in a unification scenario simply isn't relevant. It's like, you know, it includes the war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan, nuclear submarines, nuclear missiles, Northern Ireland's share of the British royal family. But one key issue in the constitutional element, which people mightn't understand in relation to the Good Friday Agreement, is the Good Friday Agreement stands any side of a referendum on a United Ireland and a New Ireland, let's call it a New Ireland, because it's different. It's not that Stormont stops and no longer exists. Under the Good Friday Agreement, Stormont continues. Northern Ireland continues to have its own administrative area because it needs to have its own administrative area in relation to employment law and other things that are unique to Northern Ireland.
Okay, we've got to leave it there. But Senator Daly, thank you very much indeed. Alex Kane, Chris Donnelly, thank you.